Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well podcast. We've got a fun and exciting show for you today. Today, I am excited to bring you Ryan and Jeff, two creative design leaders working in, I think, different but very tangential fields. So we're going to get started with some backgrounds. I think that would be the best way for our listeners to get to know you all, because our focus today is really on design, and we're going to unpack that in a couple minutes here. But Ryan, you want to go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and how you even got into this?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, how I got into the creative field. Well, I guess I always knew I wanted to do something creative. You know, coming out of high school is either become a doctor or do something creative, and I didn't really want to, you know, have the pressure of cutting people open.
I was going to say, those are two very different.
Yeah, having their life in my hands. So.
Okay.
So I went with something creative. The next dilemma was I want to do something creative and have some sort of financial security.
Right.
So I ended up going into architecture to start. Then I started taking some elective classes and found I really, really liked drawing and painting and sculpture. So I really got sucked into that. That's not as financially secure.
I didn't want to say that. It can be very financially secure, but that is the question.
One in a million.
Right.
So I did that for a little while. Then about 5 years ago, I was hanging some of my paintings in InnoVersity, where I currently work, as a director of learning experience development. And they need some help development at the time. So I kind of just stuck around at that point.
We didn't ever make you leave. So.
No. There's a movie about that, right?
The Seinfeld episode, right? Just stick around.
It's Kramer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've you know, for the past 5 years, I've really loved everything that I've been doing. And when I look back on what I was trying to find in the creative realm, it was just solving problems. So I that's what I get to do every day now. So looking back, I think I made the right choice.
Well, we think you made the right choice. We're very grateful for that choice. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a while. But your background, I think, in fine arts, there's a uniqueness to that that we're going to discuss here in a little bit. But thank you. So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I kind of come at it a little bit differently. I am not a fine artist. I can't draw. And I think because of that, I didn't consider myself a creative for a long time. And I ended up going to film school and kind of finding my niche there as more of a visual storyteller, and spent a good deal of time in the film industry and a good deal of time in the music industry. And like Ryan, you know, one of the things that I really do like to do is the problem solving. So, you know, we... you know, in our current roles, we use design, we use our talent as creatives to solve problems in creative ways. And we're always looking to, you know, push that learner experience to really take them on a journey with us. And for us, for Ryan and myself, working together, we really like the idea of pushing that learning experience into new realms that people maybe aren't expecting all the time. And that's kind of the fun part for us, solving problems, but doing it in a really creative way.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love that kind of look of the unexpected. We use the word sometimes like surprise and delight, you know, clients in a way that they weren't expecting could be done. So, and I love that you bring up the point of creativity. We actually have addressed this in numerous podcasts. I feel like it's a little bit of a soapbox I climb on, but that everybody is creative in their own way. But I just think popular culture tends to sort of classify that in one specific direction. But everyone has their own creative abilities, and that's one of the fun things we get to unpack in this podcast. So cool. Well, your backgrounds really tie into, and that's why you're guests today, obviously. What we're looking to do today is to sort of define what design is, first of all, because both of you even asked me that. There's a lot of discussion in our industry. What do we mean by design? Because it's more than one thing. So to begin with, let's talk about that a little bit. When we talk about designing learning experiences, what does design mean to each of you?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that all designers know is design is not fine art, right? Design is, design has intent. Mm-hmm. You know, fine art is subjective. If Ryan, as a fine artist, wants to build a sculpture or a painting, he can do whatever he wants, unless it's a commissioned piece, in which case I would argue it's probably crosses over into more of a design, mm-hmm. a design part. So, you know, design is not fine art. It's not arbitrary. I can't do whatever I want. Design is about problem solving. You're trying to solve a problem using your creative, whatever creative tools you have at your means, both, you know, inside yourself, and then those could be softwares or physical tools or whatever you're trying to do. And it's all encompassing. When Ryan and I talk about design, we're talking about the design of the entire experience, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And that involves a great idea. That involves collaboration. That involves a good story and good graphics and good animations and good actors or whatever mm-hmm. the solution is trying to, or the solution, how do I want to say that? What are the solution needs in order to solve the problem that we're trying to solve?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why we spend a lot of time sort of scoping what the situation is with our clients ahead of time. You know, what are their needs? What are the constraints? All of that, because we are trying to solve a problem. And if we just create something without trying to solve that problem or solve it correctly, it might look amazing, but it doesn't meet the need. So you said a phrase that's really important. Design has intent behind it. And so, Ryan, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but as our fine artist, and I should say a very good one. So design might be, or fine art might be subjective, but I've seen your work. It's excellent. And I'm not great with a lot of art. I don't always see the art, but mm-hmm. yours is amazing. Anyway.
Thank you.
We should put like a plug for your work in the show notes or something.
RyanKlotz.com.
That's right. Exactly. But talk to us a little bit about design has intent and kind of the difference there with what Jeff was talking about.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think I want to provide like a sort of not counter argument to that, but I think the idea that design is a means to an end. If you're solving a problem, you're using design to get there. Art, the impetus sometimes it can be a little bit more free, right? I can be just doing art for art's sake or doing it for myself. Like Jeff said, when you're crossing over into commission territory, that's where it starts to get blurred. I would just say that art can be the end, but not always.
No, actually, and I love that. And that's one of the reasons you both come out of two different backgrounds. So I think it's interesting to hear both viewpoints on that. So design has intent. And one of the things we have discussed quite a bit on this podcast is when you're designing learning experiences that, as you said, Jeff, that's everything from the instructional design pieces behind it and the writing and the storytelling and the instructional, how am I making sure that my users are retaining and how are we assessing and evaluating? But a huge part of it, and that's, I would say, maybe a little more of the focus today, is how are we providing that excellent experience, whether it's visually or video or audio or whatever those pieces are. I mean, I want to recognize that's not all of it, but for our focus today, we want to kind of look at what makes that excellent user experience, what makes, and with the skill set that you both have, you really bring a lot of thoughts to the table. What kind of design projects, maybe let's give our listeners some practicality here. Like what kind of design projects do you typically work on? Maybe throw us some examples of that so they can kind of hear.
Yeah. I always used to joke, and it's like, there's never a dull day what I'm doing, because we're working on everything from supply chain logistics, roofing installation, catheter insertion. It's always unique.
It's a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The things I know now.
Yeah, exactly.
But we have to use many different types of design for a variety of projects.
Absolutely. And so when you're working, you gave me some subject areas. And that's one thing I think is very interesting. I feel like we're a mile wide and an inch deep sometimes, because you have to be. You end up learning things. And we've always joked like we could maybe fly a helicopter, possibly lay some roofing, you know, maybe sell something, but like it'd be iffy at the best.
Just don't count on us to land the helicopter.
That's right. Exactly. But what kinds, let's talk about like modalities, or how are you delivering that kind of content? Just throw us some examples in your world. What does that typically look like?
Sure. Yeah. So some common types like video or animation, e-learning, which can be, there's a variety of different tools we can use, but that's kind of like the just umbrella term for digital learning solutions.
Okay. So in your world, that's kind of what you're working with. Mm-hmm. Good. And Jeff, I know yours is slightly different. You do a lot of the same things, but give us some examples of what you work with.
Sure. In addition to kind of traditional e-learning, we have a lot of experience in interactive video e-learning. So branching scenarios, kind of choose your own adventure. We, with my background coming from film, we do a lot of character-based, kind of like you're watching a TV show, like a sitcom or something more serious. But we can, you know, we've taught fraud in, you know, through that kind of a modality where we have multiple actors and we've actually dropped the learner into the middle of of a company that's trying to hack into other organizations so that we can kind of learn from the inside out. Very cool way to, you know, for an adult learner to engage. Also making those very interactive, still done in the same tools that we do traditional e-learning in, just kind of pushing the envelope. Then also, you know, we do a lot of work in augmented reality and virtual reality, and those modalities are very, are going to be a very growing modality in the industry as more and more organizations start to adopt the technology and the technology advances. You know, augmented reality is the epitome of just-in-time learning. That phrase has been around forever, but what if you could really bring any training right to where the learner is, right when they need it? And that's really what we're doing with augmented reality.
Yeah, and I think design in that specific area then becomes, it's a little different way of thinking about things too. So a lot of the design in terms of instructional, it can be, tend to be sort of linear. But in this particular case with AR, I'd say micro learning and anything that's just in time, we're designing a little differently. We're not necessarily designing linear or scaffolding. We're really designing for small topics, bits of information that can be grabbed and called up at any time. So, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on this is because I hear there's a lot of talk, and there's been a lot of talk for a long time about AR and VR in our industry, but honestly, not many people are using it in the specific industry that we're in. Obviously, like we talk military VR, those kinds of things, it's obviously being done, but in our world, but you're doing it. And I think you bring a great background to this conversation because of that.
Yeah, and we're doing a lot of it. It's not, you know, one particular customer here, one particular, as you know, we've developed a platform that you can build AR and VR solutions off of and not need to be a coder in order to do it. So I won't go into too big of a plug right now, but we're using our own tools to create those kind of solutions. And we're creating, I mean, right now we have dozens of customers currently that we're developing for.
So for our listeners who, you know, that AR is, they get the concept, but it's maybe a little vague. Can you give us perhaps like a couple topics? In other words, a couple subject areas you might be, I know you were doing something, I think, in the automotive industry, but I don't know. So you tell me.
Sure. So we can, we're working on a project right now where we're bringing the training right to the point of need for a body shop company, a company that creates paint and solutions for body shops. So we're teaching those techniques right at the point of need. So you'd be looking through your iPad at the vehicle with the big dent and all of the training that you need on technique, procedure. Is the product even in the building? You know, or does it need to be ordered? Is it backlogged? So using IoT, the Internet of Things, we can connect to the database of that company and see if the product's on the shelf, and then teach them right how to apply the product right at the point of need. We're doing stuff in the medical industry where we're replacing cadavers with 3D models of human beings and being able to see kind of the skin peel back, see the organs beating and moving and kind of how they stack and how they move. So we've done stuff with biomedical. We're doing stuff with energy, gas, lockout, tagout.
Right.
A lot of solutions right now.
And I think that's super helpful for our listeners to hear because, like I said, it's been around a lot in the industry, and Ryan and I have gone to conferences and you hear a lot about it, but then to actually see who's doing it, and there's sort of some standard use cases. And then beyond that, I haven't always seen a lot of great great use cases. And the reason I say that is, and I'm going to kind of transition us to our next thought here, because we spend a lot of time talking about following learning science, following a correct approach and process to not just, you know, predetermining what our end deliver, you know, modality is, but thinking through that. Well, the first step to that is really thinking through who your audience is. And then we, you know, go down the track from there to determine what we're going to make. But in the case of, you know, your projects, Jeff, or yours, Ryan, how do you first of all determine who your audience is? And then how does knowing who your audience is determine design? Whether it's the user interface and the visual, or whether it's the way that the instruction is designed or the modality, how do you determine an audience? And then how does that help you think about the design?
Well, I think for me, it's in addition to who is the audience, it's how does the audience best engage with the training? Are they U35? Are they on their phones all the time? In which case, that might steer us toward a solution, or at least give us an inkling of what won't work and what might work. Are they in the field? Do they have Wi-Fi? So it's really like how do they, what would be the, asking the question, what would be the best way for this user to engage? Because any barrier is a barrier, and we want to take away as many barriers as possible. So we think, you know, we ask all of those questions. So how will the learner use the training, engage with the training? I'm sure you do similar types of thoughts when you're trying to decide what type of modality to use. The nice thing is we have a, you know, we call them tools in the tool belt, or crayons in the crayon box, right? Because we don't develop in only one tool,
right?
We don't pigeonhole our customers. We ask all the right questions to really figure out the best way to solve the problem, the best tool to use, the best way to engage, based on who the audience is, and then we develop the solution that way.
Yeah, I would just add to that, when I think about, you know, the audience, it's, we've had a lot of examples where the audience is the same across different projects, but the message is different. So always looking at the audience, but also what is the message for this audience? Just one little example, specifically police officer training. And we did some training where it's about health and wellness. So we're, you know, it's a little more lighthearted of a topic. We can be a little more playful with it. But as you may guess, in an officer's world, it's not always that lighthearted. So there are certain topics that we need to be a little more serious, and we would approach the design a little bit differently in that case.
Yeah. I think what you said at the very beginning gives really good insight for our listeners into the way you approach something, because an instructional designer, for example, is very much, or a learning experience designer, is trained very much to look at the audience. There's a series of questions we ask, but you ask, how is the audience going to, or the learner, the user, going to interact with my materials? And that's a little, there's a very different spin on that. And it's a very different way of thinking of it. Because like you said, if they need it just in time and they don't have access to any kind of, you know, laptop or desktop situation or any really office environment, then we almost immediately have to jump to some sort of mobile or AR solution or whatever. Whereas Ryan, the point you're talking about too, sometimes that can be overkill. We've also had clients come to us who are super excited. They want to do something in, whether it's AR or a very sophisticated animation or whatever it is, but then we find out, well, their users are sitting in an office and it's basically 10 minutes worth of content. And we have to think about, well, how are they going to interact? Like, is that, that's really overkill. That's not the best way to design for this particular, or like you said, what's the message? And making sure, I think in our early days, we often had, I mean, animation is fun and it's cool and we love it. But if you can't tell a story with that animation, it might not be the best way to deliver it. And we often had clients who wanted an animation, and then we discovered it was like 25 minutes on lockout tagout, which doesn't, you know, like,
pretty easy to check out.
It's real easy to check out. Right. But I think the approach that you guys bring is slightly different, and it's really important. Like, that's what adds to an entire learning team. It adds to, and then we look at the tools in our tool belt and we determine what the best tool to use is.
Yeah. I think we're always trying to design the greatest experience for the learner.
Yes.
And, you know, what that experience is, you brought up that a lot of customers kind of come with an idea of what the solution should be. We've been having that challenge for, you know, over a decade.
Yeah.
Our job is to make sure that what they think they want is really what's going to solve the problem that they have.
Exactly.
And I consider it part of what we do, you know, that they're counting on us. And sometimes we have to have that tough conversation and say, we understand what you think you want here, but let us explain why maybe we need to look at a different way of solving that problem, you know, so that, you know, we're really, you know, the solution we develop is effective. And I think because we're always looking at how to design the best experience, that really carries through the entire project. So that's the, you know, that's the idea. That's, you know, the story that we're creating. We're very story driven whenever possible. We have a lot of thoughts on why certain things work better than others, right? The learning science behind why do you remember the lyrics of a song, but you can't remember your cousin's name, right?
There's multiple reasons for that, but multiple problems there.
Right. And, you know, I think a lot of people worry about design when they hear that word. You know, I'm not a designer, or I'm not creative, or I'm not an artist, or whatever. But the good thing is we may not all know what bad design looks like, but we all know what good design looks like. I mean, when you see it, you know it. So, you know, I would encourage people to, you know, surround yourself with people who complement what you need, right? If you're a really good instructional designer and you really know how to bring the learning science into what you're developing, then build a team that is creative around you so that you are able to engage the learner. Because if the learner is not engaged, then they're not going to learn anything. And I think that that's a huge thing that gets missed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's, Ryan, you and one other person were really like our first foray into that. I mean, most of our listeners, if you have a learning team, you have instructional designers who run the gamut. So they meet with this, you know, they do the needs assessment, they meet with the subject matter experts, they write the storyboards, and then they go to their development tool and they start to develop. And depending on where their strengths lie and their years of experience, one or the other of those typically suffers a little bit. And that's not a criticism. I've done all of those things, and I would not want any of you to look at some of my finished products. So, but bringing that fine arts, like you said, knowing, having that design eye, and that was something we kind of did unique on our team to start with, was we recognized you have those skills. We can teach you software. And then once we taught that, with the mind that you have and your team, like, you were able to push the boundaries and the envelopes way beyond. So I don't know, Ryan, if you even want to talk a little bit about the perspective you bring, or kind of your early thoughts. I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. No, you're bringing back a lot of memories. Talk about going back.
Oh, no.
There's ones or bad ones.
I know.
And I think it's important, or I just remember how important it was to, like, recognize the other side of the coin, right?
Yeah.
You have the instructional designers that are writing these ideas and coming up with something. It's important for us to learn very quickly how to translate, not just, you know, not just make it pretty, not just, you know, do whatever we want. We had to learn how to understand what they want, or what they want to happen, and then maybe add some flair to it. But there was that communication and collaboration early on that was really important to nail down.
Absolutely. And that's a critical piece. I think there's really two levels to that design. Like, you can just make it look pretty, so to speak, but what you've done an excellent job of is your whole team, really, I would say, like, they've had a informal degree in instructional design at this point, because there's one thing to make something look nice and even be, like you'd said, Jeff, engaging, appealing, looks nice. There's a whole nother level to design where that design actually adds to my learning and my retention, because there's an animation or a story or a graphic or a video that explains it in a way that's different than the audio I'm hearing, or explains in a way that for some people made a lot more sense, or as an example. So but you're right. It's that interactive like collaboration that I think is really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a marriage. I mean, you I would argue you can't have one without the other.
You cannot.
Still have,
I agree.
And still have a powerful solution that's solving problems, right? You know, keeping the learner engaged. So if the instructional design says, you know, we need to have an interaction here where we're reinforcing something, then it's on us to come up with an mm-hmm. interaction that is engaging and right. isn't just, you know, a next button or isn't yeah. just a whatever typical, you know, thing that anybody could put out there, but really looking at every single element and thinking, how can we advance this instructional design? How can we engage this learner? How can we keep them entertained to some degree?
For sure.
Entertainment doesn't mean funny. It can right. be any kind of, mm-hmm. of just, but engaged, right? Wanting to stay focused on the training that they're looking at.
Yeah, we just in some of our recent podcasts talked a lot about motivating factors. And that's what you're talking about. They're engaged, but they're motivated to start, continue at some point. Like there's something that, and then motivated to not just finish, but want to come back because there was something about it that was compelling. So, right.
Agreed.
So I'm going to throw you guys a little bit of a question you might not have prepared for, but Jeff, what you said made me really think. I still think it's an easy one. So, one of the things you said was surround yourself with people who maybe have differing gifts or, but I just think in general, when you work in this industry, it's really easy to get kind of bogged down in what you're doing every day. But no matter who you are, you can always expand your creative thinking and abilities. I remember someone on the team at one point said, I started looking at commercials in a whole different way. Like I was looking at them in terms of, what made them compelling? How did they use the visuals? What was the timing? What did the imagery look like? And I remember thinking, I never think about that. I like fast forward through them, you know, but what are some things you do? I would say outside of our world, for example, myself, like I actually very much like interior decorating and sewing. And I'm always looking at like colors and design books and things like that, completely outside of this world. But I think it informs my understanding of what color looks like and how things fit together. Are there things you do that help sort of expand your creativity outside of the world that you're in? I know it's a hard one.
Yeah. My wife is an interior designer. So I get a lot of inspiration from her. My wife, daughter, myself, we are all kind of into fashion a little bit. You know, they're them maybe more than me for what I'm wearing today, but, you know, we appreciate that stuff. We're all into photography, you know, languages, traveling, we're big foodies. So all of that, kind of influences, I think, you know, subliminally, mm-hmm. maybe some of the ways that I look at the world and some of the things I do. Back in the day, you know, we used to watch the Super Bowl just for the commercials.
Oh, for sure.
It was a whole bunch of creatives that would get together and we would, you know, we'd be getting our food while the game was playing and then the commercial would come out and everybody would run in and we'd all like, well, you know, critique the commercials together. So we're very nerdy that way.
I'm trying to think of some, I mean, I still do a lot of fine art, so there's still some things that
right.
I think, you know, I can bring in from that area. Art in general for me has always been like, what's the latest obsession? What's the next thing? What's the next medium I can explore? If it's clay or plaster or whatever. Lately though, it's been something a little bit different. I think branches more into game design. Recently discovered how much I love board games. So I've been playing, but also trying to design that myself. So I think some of the game theory and designing the way that you would interact with a board game and just the logical side to that design feels a little different. I think that's kind of informed some of what I've been doing lately at work.
I love that. We have game nights here at the company about once a month. And, but yeah, that again, I feel like I keep making shameless plugs for this podcast, but the last two, you know, prior to the release of this podcast, they're all about games. And one of them is just discussing from video games to board games and like how those inform, you know, what kind of motivating factors they use and all of that. So I love that. That's great. And I know we've had conversations with your fine art, like how do you carve out time to still be able to do that? Because it's a part of who you are and it informs what you do at work. So, and I know you travel and camp. sometimes in places I can't imagine, but I think that has to feed your creativeness too.
Yeah, just getting out there, I think that time just for peace and relaxation kind of helps reset things. Yeah, camping's been pretty big in my life lately.
Yeah.
Checking out the bugs that sneak into your tent.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I think in order for my creativity to be, you know, perked or inspired, I have to have a restroom that is working. So I don't know how you do it, but I love that you camp a lot.
I like to critique the flour on the foam of my latte.
Camping's not for everyone.
That's right. Well, to your point, Jeff, about the food, a lot of times when we travel, and we've traveled a lot, people are like, what did you see? And we do see a lot of things, but I usually can tell the narrative by where we ate. Well, first we ate here, and this is what we had. And I'm like, I think we just eat our way through wherever we're going.
Well, it's actually a really good, way to think about training is the food, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, food is for sustenance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's obviously we need food, but you can do so much with it, and you could present someone really delicious food that maybe doesn't look really good before you taste it, or you can present really good food that's presented really mm-hmm. well and wants to make you taste it. So it's almost like training, you know, it's like we need it. We have to develop it. People need to know things, but look at all the different ways that we could present this to them. Look at all the different creative solutions that we could come up with, the ways we can combine things in order to have a completely different experience.
Well, like the expression, you eat with your eyes first.
Yeah.
That's very true, right?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great analogy. So, and also I'm hungry, so I think you're coming into lunchtime here. Well, I just have a couple other questions, and maybe we'll kind of, you know, put these together, but when we look at designing learning experiences, this isn't 100% true, but they often fall into sort of categories of more maybe just a knowledge-based type experience versus a what we call no believe do. So like, or a believe where we're trying to change attitudes and hearts and minds. And then do is that skill based. So you were talking prior, you know, with the AR situation and somebody's working on a car. And so that's very skill based. But in general, you can, attack any one of those three, no, believe, do. But do you approach your design a little differently, the way that the user interacts and all of that, if you're designing for something for more knowledge-based, for skills-based, or for, like, beliefs and attitude change?
You know, I think the beliefs and attitude, I think, fall kind of into, you know, what I bring from my past, mm-hmm. you know, so, yeah. The writing, the video, the film, kind of the character development, when you're trying to change the way somebody thinks, the way that they act, the way that they interact, anytime that you're, you know, any of those soft skill type things, you want to teach somebody empathy, you want to mm-hmm. teach somebody, I mean, to see somebody, you know, and have that create situations and stories and scenarios where you're putting the learner into a situation where they start to feel that. Mm-hmm. I think that's real applicable. And that sometimes will drive, where I want to take a solution.
Yeah, the belief piece or attitudes, hearts, minds, that kind of thing, takes for sure, I think, a more sophisticated solution, a more complex solution, and often a longer one. It's not like a one and done. And learning should never be one and done. But you really have to get at why people, you might have to unpack resistance. You know, you certainly have to provide a lot of motivation and why to help them change, and then reinforcement of that so that those attitudes and beliefs are continually evolving and changing.
Completely.
I don't know. I know, Ryan, we've talked in the past, sort of your traditional form of e-learning is often what is a good solution for that knowledge base. And again, there's hardly ever a solution we design that's just one thing either. But when you're looking at people kind of maybe that lower level of Bloom's taxonomy, we just need them to acquire some knowledge that they can probably apply fairly quickly. It needs to be a simple solution and pretty just, you know, very effective, simple. That often ends up being like more of a traditional e-learning or interactive video, but it's something that's fairly straightforward. When we talk about designing for skills, though, or how to do something, what are some, you know, ways that you think differently about that, or what does that look like?
Sure. And I'll just back up a little bit to the know piece of it, because I think a big part of that, it sounds simple, but you have to spend a lot of time trying to avoid doing anything wrong. I think it may sound simple to do, but it's harder to not mess up.
Great point.
Creating, you know, cognitive overload, mm-hmm. or putting too much on screen. From like a UI perspective, having the buttons in the same spot every time, so learners not trying to figure out what to do.
Right,
they're
hunting
paying attention
around
to the content. So you're really just trying to avoid making mistakes. From the do side, I feel like that's where I'm really excited with this whole the XR. That's because it's not just showing them how to do something, which was really important from a traditional standpoint. It's why tell them when you can show them.
Yes.
But now they can actually do it. So it's really exciting to, you know, be in this industry when that's sort of shifting that direction.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, I mean, that's, for the most part, that's how humans prefer to learn. It's just we've been constrained by the tools or by time or by distance. Or, I mean, I think about your team. When we hire people, they come with skills, but we often just drop them in and actually have them like deconstruct things and like get your hands dirty, start doing it. Most of us prefer to do that, especially when it comes to learning skills or playing a game. I mean, I don't know. I'm not huge into like long strategy games for hours, but we've all had like that time where we meet with friends, we're like, we have this great game. 20 minutes later, you're still trying to figure out the rules. And you're like, let's just play. Yeah. So I love that we're, like you said, a time in our industry where we can immerse people right in it and just have them do it.
And they can do it without like the risk of the danger of, you know, crawling up on a power line, and, you know, they can practice with the safety of like VR.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very exciting time, and it's going to be fun. We're going to spend more time on this podcast later this summer talking about some of those topics in more depth, too. So one last question, and we've addressed it a little bit, but how does design impact motivation? So we've talked about the positive ways, right? Like the positive ways we design an experience. Are there any for sure fire, like just buzz killers, like ways that design, I mean, if it's designed poorly, your learner is like instantly demotivated. Is there anything that should be avoided?
Well, I think Ryan mentioned a really good one, and that's, you know, any barrier to entry, right? So if the learner can't figure out how to, you know, engage with the learning period, that's a problem. Right? And I think, you know, I think using, you know, if you're trying, you know, if you're trying to teach something, you know, and you are using the complete wrong modality. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like, you know, like learning is in such a great transitional moment right now, because like you said, I mean, for a long time, instructor-led training was the only way. And then for a long time, kind of next button e-learning was the only way. And now there's all these new ways that we can train. There's all of these, you know, new ways that we can engage. It's kind of like, you know, if you only knew that you could walk from, you know, Boston to California, then you're going to walk. But if you knew that there was a train, maybe it's better to take the train. If you had to get there really fast and you knew there was a plane, well, now you would use that. So it's kind of triangulating all of these needs from the learner, from the client, from the what needs to be, what problem you're trying to solve, what needs to be learned, and triangulating that into the perfect modality for that solution. And that's an exciting, you know, thing that we're in right now. And to have all of these accessible, especially in our company, is really fun.
Yeah, agreed. The illustration you said, all the different crayons in the box, it's very exciting. And it's fun to be able to say yes. And, you know, sometimes in very meaningful ways. I mean, we've worked with some nonprofits who really a huge part of their lifeblood is that like personal touch, that interaction, that ILT stuff. And when COVID hit, I mean, they really felt like a big part of their mission was just gone forever. And to be able to say, no, that's not the case at all. Like, we have solutions that can create that personal contact still, and, you know, create that social collaboration and learning. So I don't know, Ryan, if you have anything off the top of your head, just a immediate design buzzkill, or whether we have kind of addressed those.
Yeah, I just think about it more from a balance. I know this is, you think of like the best way to do something. And the reality is you're catering to a lot of different learning types. So it could be more visual, could be more auditory. So I just want, you know, kind of caveat there that it may be the best for one learner, might not be the best for another. So we're kind of, we're walking it's a balancing act, figuring that out.
Well, and it's key to finding out who your audience is and all of that. But yeah, that's a great point. It's always a bit of a balance. And some people prefer, we talked a lot about with this with games. So certain portions of a population love games. And if you gamify something and there's leaderboards and badges and they think it's the coolest thing, and some people hate it. So like, that's juvenile and dumb. And why would I participate? So it's a very, like you said, trying to design the best solution. But, you know, as we conclude, all the crayons, all the tools in the tool belt, it's just a really exciting time. Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, I'm really excited. I love asking this question. I'm not sure if participants on the podcast always love answering it, but my question to both of you is, what are you learning well now? So our audience is interested. You're both really creative people. You obviously have a lot of outside interests and passions that help feed that creativity. So what is one thing that you're interested in learning right now?
I'm trying to learn Spanish.
Oh, that's great.
I love to travel. I live in Michigan. I would love at some point in my life to be able to spend more time somewhere warm. And Mexico is one of my favorite places to go. I love being able to communicate with the locals and not feel like a tourist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some great tools out there. You know, I'll give a plug to Rosetta Stone. I love it. I have an app on my phone called Spanish Dict, and it dictionary of Spanish, when, you know, little phrases right when I'm just in time learning, right when I need it. I'm about to, you know, try to converse with somebody and I forget a little phrase or something. So I love seeing, you know, I mean, that's, you know, those are, most of those are adult learning. And I love seeing, you know, that successful kind of training come out. It really helps me on the spot, especially. Mm-hmm. That's my new thing.
I love that. And it's sort of ironic tangentially here. So my son is in high school, but learning Spanish. And there's two different models right now for teaching that. One is very much that you memorize all the words and all the correct grammar and all the conjugation, and then you start to put stuff together. And that was the situation last year. Needless to say, it did not go well. He needs to be immersed in things. We learned a lot of Spanish. I don't think he learned any, but we spent a lot of time helping him. This year, totally different model. He's immersed. We don't worry about grammar or spelling. We're just like, how would I flow? And if I can't remember, I put the English word in, but I'm building my sentence and I'm trying to put in as much as I remember. I can't even tell you how much Spanish. Like, he's just throwing out stuff all the time. To be fair, I don't know if it's correct, but it sounds really good. So to your point, I mean, it's that immersive piece of learning a language. So that's great. Learning a language is difficult, and those are some really good tools.
Like, we should have put him on the spot and asked him to say
it. We should. Yeah. What can you say?
My Spanglish is really good right now. The nice thing is, when you go to Mexico, a lot of them are speaking Spanglish too.
Okay.
In the reverse.
They're accommodating.
Right? So if you try to, like your son, you know, you just try to get more and more right. And yeah, we throw a couple English words in there once in a while.
Yeah. That's great. What about you, Ryan?
I kind of already mentioned a little bit. It's been my latest obsession with trying to learn and just dive into a little bit deeper with board games. And I've just been really fascinated with the sort of the logical aspect and the balancing act of like what motivates somebody, if it's maximizing resources or fear of missing out. And again, that goes back to the game theory, which I know sounds like was the last podcast. Mm-hmm. But that's been really fascinating to me.
Are you actually building a game?
I'm trying to. I have been playing with, you know, like the paper cutout version of it. So that's what I found.
Excellent.
Is the more you build, the more you realize what you're missing. So there's an aspect of the game or a mechanism that, okay, well, then the game's just going to break.
Okay.
So I was trying to do everything in theory just in my sketchbook. And I was like, until I start playing with pieces and getting them physically made, I didn't know what I was missing.
So what is the topic, or what's your premise, or is that a secret still?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, no. Okay.
Somebody's going to steal it.
All right. Oh, that's a great point. Well, maybe we'll look forward to someday having a podcast where we plug your game because you're releasing it. So, all right. Well, thank you both so much. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thanks, Miriam. Thanks for having us.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.